This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, it's Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle, KIRO AM Seattle here, and this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness, as it always is. Brock, it wasn't the way it was to go, although it was maybe the way a lot of people expected it would go. Really difficult to go on the road in Denver. Their record in September has been incredible. The Broncos' record at home in September has been incredible. The altitude, the heat, generally they have a decent team there. You kind of put it all together, and I don't know. I had fun watching it, and I thought that they did well to be in it late, and they didn't. This one got away.
That's the most fun I've had watching a loss for the Seahawks in I don't know how long.
I would agree with that.
That sounds very weird to say. I don't think that's a great Denver team. Skinny Graz, by the way, who's coming back on the air, I believe, today. Is Graz coming back today? I think he was tweeting about it and texting about it, and I sure hope so. Graz tweeted or wrote after the game saying that's not a good Denver team. Right? And that's not a 12 or 11-win Denver team, I don't think, and especially in that AFC West with Los Angeles and Kansas City, and we'll see what Oakland tonight, you know, and they've got a journeyman quarterback that threw three picks, you know, that gave you some opportunities. Got young people that they're playing as well. So no surprise, it was kind of a back and forth to the very end. And I don't know if I should feel bad saying it, but that is the most fun that I've had in a losing environment for the Seahawks in I don't know how long.
That's the big picture. Now the details.
Ball is intercepted. It is Cam Chancellor.
It's Brock and Salk's takeaways.
Here comes the blitz. Palmer gets hit. Ball comes out.
Every single thought that runs through the mind of Brock and Salk while watching the Hawks game.
Kaepernick takes the snap, looks. Now he throws right down. It's intercepted. Richard Sherman again.
And it starts now.
You know, we talked on Friday. I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, doing the show from afar. And obviously a lot of conversation Friday was about that article that came up in Sports Illustrated about Russell and Pete Carroll and this team and all those dynamics, the good, the bad, and ugly of all of that stuff. But, you know, at some point we got to a little bit of the football, Mike, and said, hey, watch for this and watch for Russell trusting people here and watch for this stat. You know, if you'd have told me on Friday that the Seahawks would have one rushing first down and be 2-for-12 on third down, there's no chance. You were going to be the, 18th out of 19th straight team to lose opening weekend in Denver, and that's exactly what they were. You know, those two probably go hand in hand, to be quite honest with you. When you don't run the ball successfully, it's hard. You're in longer third downs, and Coach Carroll, cut number 8, was speaking to that post-game, especially out on the road.
But for us, some similar things occurred in this game that you've heard the themes before, third downs. You know, we're lousy, and it was because we were third and 9 like 6 times or whatever it was, 5, 6, 7 times plus. And we didn't run the ball as well as we wanted to, and we wound up getting sacked a bunch of times. So those are just similar issues, and I'm disappointed on the offensive side.
Now, the two third down conversions were gigantic. One was a touchdown to Brandon Marshall down in the red zone. The other was a 3rd and 12 seed through 3 different defenders on a curl route from the pocket that is good a throw as Russell made all day yesterday. That thing was
humming.
And Brandon Marshall turned around and, like, just as he turned around, caught it. And because he's a big body dude, could take the contact.
Did he catch it or did the ball catch him?
That's a great point. Probably more of the latter, yes. I will say this. It's an excuse, but it's a bummer that Doug wasn't in there for those third downs. Because against those guys, that little route that was supposed to go to Jerron Brown that Russ didn't throw, if that's to Doug, he throws it with his eyes closed. Then you have Tyler on one side, Doug on the other, or those two working in unison to beat man coverage, to beat some of the pressure, losing his security blanket, losing the guy on third down that's as good as anybody in this league on third down was a pretty significant loss. And I think you could feel Russell squeezing the ball in those moments a little too much.
Takeaways.
All right, they played a lot of guys on defense yesterday. They played 4 safeties, 5 linebackers, every defensive lineman, plus they rotated in George Fant at left tackle for a few plays. A weird split at running back despite all the success that Chris Carson had. So what was it? Was it just injuries? Was it entirely about the way people played? I mean, I got to imagine a lot of it was the plan to both deal with the heat and the altitude. And you heard John Clayton tell us earlier that guys were throwing up on the sideline. And I believe that. My question, though, was, do you think some of it was developmental? Are they trying to get a look at Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson both? Are they trying to make sure they get a little bit of a look at George Fant and get him in there? Do they want to see a little bit of what they have in Rashad Penny since they didn't get nearly enough in preseason?
Mm-hmm.
Are they trying to develop these guys a little bit, even game one of the season?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. Not even. That's what Pete does. The time you do that is in September, so you'll be better in December. You know what? I'm going to hog tackle on this one with you. Not piggyback. I'm going to hog tackle.
Okay.
That's the same thing. You
it
jump
is?
Right on the back of it.
That's
yeah.
a thing?
Well, that's what Mike McIntyre said to us at halftime, or said to Allison on
I'm
the field.
I'm going
to
hog tackle
we didn't,
on top
we,
of
you
that?
Know, we teach hog tackling. We wasn't hog tackling. So I'm going to imagine if
I
you tackle.
That means the same as piggybacking.
Well, I just use pig and hog. Like jump on the back of it. I think if you hog tackle, you do jump on the hog and you wrestle that sucker to the ground. You don't just come in blind with your eyes closed and try to arm tackle, as Colorado did. So I was trying to be cute, but I'm going to go with your youth point, Mike, and I'll let Coach Carroll say it first. Cut number 14 here, the one rookie that all eyes were on, the nation was on that linebacker. Here was just one piece of that youth yesterday, and Coach speaking to it.
Well, this is Shaquem talking about what he learned.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's just knowing that, you know, you gotta know what the coaches are telling you, and you got to be able to make keys and see what's going on out there. And, you know, obviously going out there today, obviously you're going to go against, you know, better people, and you're going to get a really good competition out of everybody. And obviously everybody going to get everything they got, so you got to be ready to, you know, to fight back. And, you know, before we came in here, we knew it was going to be, you know, dogfight. We knew we had to get everything we got, and, you know. It wasn't what we expected. It wasn't what we wanted out of it. But, you know, that's why we can learn from this and be able to bounce back.
And Shaquem is going to have to. And Trey is going to have to. And this youth is going to have to. And even the Delanos and the other young players might got to learn that every inch, every flinch, every step matters in the NFL. It does. And you can hear it right there from Shaquem. I guarantee you they're going to watch tape and go, oh, man. Like, I could get away with that in college. I could take one misstep in college and still compensate. Not in this league, my friend. Not in this league. Your ability to process and still play fast, that's the hardest thing for young players. Right? What Earl does and what Russ does and what Bobby does, like, they don't have to sit there and think. They just process so quickly that they just react and fly. Really hard for youth to do that, and I think you felt that as much as anything yesterday.
Takeaways.
Well, two youth that did get it immediately were Uncle Will and Disley. I mean, Uncle Will and Michael Dixon. Uncle Will and Michael Dixon were absolutely phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal. Disley sets a franchise record yesterday for any rookie wide receiver, nor not just a tight end, with a 100-yard day. And Dixon flipped the field repeatedly. You know, Seabass, unfortunately, could have made a kick or guys block for Tyler Lockett. That special teams could have and maybe would have won them the game. Cut number three, though, Mr. Dixon. Man, he is as good as it gets in this league.
Michael Dixon, this time an end-over-end punt. Pac-Man Jones is going to let it bounce at the 10. The Seahawks are going to down this baby inside the 5-yard line. He touched it at about the 2. Did the Seahawk getting down there? Was it Nico? I think it might have been Nico Thorpe.
One of the best.
One of the captains on this team and captain for special teams. A 59-yard punt and down at the 2-yard line.
Did I read it was 6-plus punts? That was an NFL record? 59-yard average and a 56 net?
I think there was one other who had done it. Mike Seifers, I think, had done
it
one game or something like that.
That's
but
nuts.
Yeah, he was ridiculous.
That's absolutely stupid.
Is he
nuts.
The best player in the team already?
So the question, jerk.
I'm not joking.
MVP.
Is he the best player on the team at his job?
is he the best punter? If he's the best player in the league at his position, then yes.
Brock. Oh my God! What a kicker, man! What I don't know what his numbers wound up, but he's a fantastic part of our team, and we're just getting warmed up with him. You know, he's really something. I mean, the punts were gorgeous, but not just the distance of the punt, but the placement of the punts too. You know, guys covered well too. We had one return, and we had a penalty on that one, so we did really well covering for him as well.
They were gorgeous,
gorgeous.
The coach called his punts gorgeous.
Art.
We're going to have to
I'm
talk
sorry,
about
I
that.
Can't do that.
The one he kicked coffin corner right was my favorite. It was blasted and immediately went out of bounds. I mean, because it wasn't like the high arcing. He just put it right into the corner and let it go right out
of
bounds.
Is that where Pac-Man was trying to like mark where it went out?
Yeah,
at the 6.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Pac-Man. Go do your work.
Takeaways.
All right, let me be clear. The Seahawks did not lose this game because of the referees. They did not lose this game because of the officiating. And anybody who's sitting there saying they lost the game because of it, I think you're wrong. But the call on the TD was weak, and more than anything, it just points out issues. I don't know that the refs got that call wrong. I don't know that his foot was out of bounds, and anybody who says that they do, I think you're crazy. But
you don't know definitively.
The process made no sense. So the call on the field by the person with the best view is incomplete.
Yep.
Somebody with not as good of a view comes over and overrules him and says, no, it's complete. Then it goes upstairs to the booth where they decide they can't tell, so they've got to stick with the call that was made on the field, which was a touchdown, except that that was the overruled play. So the problem I have with it is that my impression, and this is a story, not a fact, but my impression was that they called it a touchdown so that it would be automatically reviewed, figuring that replay would figure it out because it almost always has a clear, distinct view. Huh. Instead, replay was blurry for whatever reason, probably because this was the 12th game on Fox's roster, and instead of getting NBC it like they had last night on the sidelines,
you got a blurry
shot where you couldn't tell anything and only two camera angles.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, the Seahawks get completely hosed by the fact that the referees were trying to pass the buck.
Yeah.
And I think that is weak sauce in every way.
Yeah, I think sometimes I know I have to be careful broadcasting, and I think even, you know, on this show, talking about terms that we think that we know, that everybody knows. But there's a big difference between confirmed and stands, right? And I don't think everybody knows that. You know, when that thing goes to replay, and I'm not talking to you P1 diehard football people, you all do right now. Okay, and you can raise your hand and say, I know the difference. Good. I'm glad you do.
I know.
Yes, you do.
Brock, we know.
Stands and confirms. But, some in the audience may not or need to be reminded that when it goes to the booth and the booth said the call stands on the field, they don't know. Whatever was going to be called on the field was going to be called. So had it been called and they would have just stuck to their call, and absolutely Vance would have thrown the flag to replay it anyway, but it would have been incomplete. If that would have been the call as it was originally called, it would have stood. It's only when you confirm it that it is just unequivocal that we've got this one right.
And they could. There's no way you could have. There's no way you could equivocally say, based on the blurriness of the sideline. Why is the sideline so blurry?
Yep.
Why did that happen?
Yeah, you've only got a couple cameras. That's exactly to your point.
No, but like the paint on the sideline was a little hazy.
Yeah.
In there.
It sure seemed it.
Yeah.
It was odd, but I don't think that's the reason they lost
the
game.
And by the way,
I mean, they're already down at the 5-yard line.
And Pete not getting his flag out on that early play, I did not see an immediate recovery. He certainly fumbled, but I don't think they would have won that.
I
don't think there was an immediate, in order for that to be overturned, you have to have an immediate recovery. So again, you know, they blew these two major calls, takeaway. I really don't think that would have been overturned.
Takeaways.
Hey, speaking of Coach Carroll, was it just me? Or was he as energetic and as effusive on his sidelines in praise that we've ever seen? I mean, we
see... It's a plant-based turn.
I did not notice that.
You did not notice
He seemed the same as always.
Oh, man. He is always energized. There's no question about it, Mike.
I don't know how you could split hairs.
How could I split hairs? Because he talked to everybody at any time. D-lineman, receiver, punter, quarterback. He was in the stands at one point with the Seahawks 12s that traveled there. He gave him some gum. He was like, are you guys enjoying this? Isn't this so much fun?
Are you done?
I'm not done because I think, honestly, his teaching, to your point, to begin this show about development and where this program's got to go, he is ratcheted up because he knows it too. Like every single, don't take anything for granted. Any play, any series, any quarter, any game that, you know, when you got guys that have done it like he had for years and years and years, he's not sitting over on the bench hugging Michael Bennett after a sack. He's not. Right? He's over there talking to Tyler Lockett. He's talking to the rookies. He was just effusive in his if not praise or energy, his conversation throughout that game. And I think you will see that consistent over the course of this season.
Takeaways.
All right, let's grade through a few of the question marks heading into this season. What you saw in game number one, the pass blocking, I thought was passable. I know they gave up 6 sacks. A couple of those were on Russell and holding the ball a little bit too long. They weren't perfect, but facing Von Miller, Chubb, and a pretty good pass rush on the road at altitude.
Yeah, serviceable.
I thought they were passable.
Yep.
Right? It wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as certainly we've seen from them at times.
Agreed.
Playing without DJ Fluker and Sweezy's first time out there, I thought it was passable. The run blocking I thought was poor, but I'm going to give them an incomplete because I didn't think Schottenheimer committed to it enough early in the game. just didn't run early all that much. So
I, and Penny's legs just looked heavy. His lungs looked heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the whole run game, setup operation, Nefeti. Britt had a tough time at times inside with those monsters. Yeah, that if the pass protection was serviceable or passable, the run game wasn't.
I would say poor to incomplete would be my answer on that. The pass rush is just was a failure. It was a failure. It was non-existent. They had one sack when Case Keenum just ran into the arms of Frank Clark, who hadn't had a tremendous amount of pressure, was just sort of at the bottom of the pocket. Brock, that was...
Yeah, you remember those early years?
What's the number they're supposed to get to in sacks? 30?
Mid-30s.
Mid-30s?
Yeah.
Are they going to get to 10?
Well, they got one yesterday, so yes, they'll get to at least 16. They'll get to...
You sure?
Yes, I'm positive.
Are you?
They'll get a sack a game.
All right. I hope you're right, because Deion Jordan played in 15 plays. He did have the nice play where he jumped up and nearly intercepted the ball, but other than that, he was largely invisible in his first action. Frank Clark had two plays where he wasn't invisible, and on every other play, he was invisible in that game. He did have the sack, and he had another nice pressure. And other than that, bringing blitz was almost the only thing they could do to generate even a sniff of Case Keenum. That was, I thought, an abject failure. Run defense, iffy?
Iffy.
Iffy?
At times, really on it. At times, filling gaps and really on it. And at times, not so much.
Right cornerback.
You know what? He got off the field on a few third downs.
I thought he did okay. Yeah. I know he gave up a lot of yards, but
yeah.
I thought he made a few mistakes. But for his first game ever playing cornerback,
I'll tell you what
he was pretty good.
I'll tell you what he was not. He was not scared.
No.
And that, when you play that position.
Trey Flowers.
Yes.
Good.
He's physical.
Yeah.
A little fight to him. He got off the, you
know. Led the team in tackles.
Yes. And it wasn't as if Denver was like, they were 4 of 12 on third downs. So it wasn't like they were just gashing him. He got off the field a few of those occasions.
Yeah, he got beat a few times and he won a few of them. I was at very least encouraged about the future for Trey Flowers. And then the last one that I think has to be a costly one was linebacker depth. They played Calitro. He's just a guy. Shaquem did his best and I think struggled with some of the speed of the game early.
Yep.
There was that linebacker depth is an issue.
Yeah, you need KJ back in the bad way. And hopefully by Monday he is healed up enough. You need that combination. They eat up space. They eat up route combinations. There's just a comfort level of those two guys, I think, for everybody on the field when KJ and Bobby are back in there together. Remember the early days? 2010, 2011, 2012 with Pete, even into 2012, where you would have that run-stopping D-line and they couldn't rush the passer. And then you'd bring in kind of your pass rushers in passing situations and teams would say, okay, then we're going to throw when the run guys are in. And that's kind of what it felt like yesterday. When the big run stuffers were in, they could stop the run, but there was no chance they were doing anything to impact the pocket whatsoever. And then you put the lighter guys in, Jacob and Deion, and then all of a sudden they're going to run a little bit and those creases are there and you're getting onto the linebackers. So kind of massaging those two groups is going to be a bit of the process.
Takeaways.
By the way, it should go noted in there, and I'll let you do your takeaway. Bradley McDougal had a hell of a game.
Yep.
Man, had two picks, could have had three or maybe even four despite being injured in the game. He was all over the field.
Yeah, that whole process and thinking, reacting, he could do it all. Right?
He
played really well. Where have all the fullbacks gone? I'm serious, man. I'm watching the league. Like, where are you?
There's like two good fullbacks. There's that Juszczyk kid in San Francisco and the kid in New England who went to Navy.
Like, where are you? You know, where are the fullbacks that can block? When Chris Carson just got, I don't even know the word to use, on the fumble, Devon Miller just ripped that ball away.
I've never
from
seen
him.
That happen.
He got punked.
Thank you. Kyle, that's an appropriate word. When Chris Carson got punked on that play, part of the reason, Trey Madden, you got to go block Von Miller. Go block him. And he just like dove and ate grass at his feet. And so Von's like, okay, Chris, come right back to me. And then I'm going to punk you. Like, go block him. I mean, and then catch the ball. And I know it wasn't a great throw, but catch the ball. Just that position has got to – you want to talk about diversifying your run game, you've got to get something out of the fullback spot. And was it 2015 or 16 when Marcel Reese came here? Maybe it was 16. I want to believe it was the second half of 2015. It wasn't. I'm pretty sure it was 2016. But just having a fullback that can bring that and provide that, and Michael Robinson and the comfort level with that – Yeah, that's nowhere near with that position right now. And nobody. You only got one. I mean, Trey, and he's a good special teams player, so you have him on the roster, but there's just nothing out of that position, and that's a bummer.
Takeaways.
What'd you think of Brian Schottenheimer in his debut as the offensive coordinator? There was some cool creativity. I thought it was a mixed bag. Cool creativity and the long pass to Tyler Lockett. That was an awesome play. Play it for me. Just the whole way they motioned out to the right, moved the pocket, and then all cut of a sudden going all the way back. Cut seven. This play was beautifully done.
Russell from the shotgun. Play fake to him. Russell's going to half roll right. He's going to stop. He's going to pump. He's going to look. He's got Lockett deep. Lockett makes it catch 10. 5. Touchdown. Seahawks. 51 yards. Russell. Roll right. Stop. Throw back left. Lockett wide open between the defenders downfield, and Russell was not going to miss him. He did not. The Seahawks take the lead 23-20.
I forget who pointed out that Duane Brown threw up his hands as a touchdown before it was even caught.
Yep.
Like they knew.
Like Larry Bird.
They had it all the way. But we've seen that play before. It looked reminiscent of the bomb that he threw to Tanner McAvoy last year, 2 years ago. I mean, we've seen that. I got to give them credit. They didn't burn any timeouts in the second half. They used them all, and they needed it. The only reason they had a shot at the end of the game with a minute left is because they still had all three of their timeouts. Close games, it's incredibly important. But there was also some stuff that was head-scratching. Where was the early running game? Why do you come out and throw play action, then pass on second down, and now you're running on third and 10 just to make it okay? When you're trying to be a balanced football team, you actually have to commit to it. Play action on third and inches? Why is there play action
on third and inches? That was my least favorite of any call in the game.
Where was Chris Carson in general? He was churning up yards.
Fumble.
No, even before that, Brock. I mean, I understand they're trying to get Penny going, and they want the back and forth, and they don't want to exhaust anybody there. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more Chris Carson.
Yeah.
I mean, given how effective I thought he looked.
7 yards a carry. Yeah, you would. I said 20 carries, right? He got 7. So, yeah, that third and inches was the biggest head-scratcher. I love the touchdown to Disley. That was set up beautifully, right? That is well taught, well coached,
but
beautifully
executed. There was some oddity in this game. Like, I mean, Disley comes up with that 66-yard play to get down to the 5-yard line. It's first and goal from the 5. You run a sweep to the boundary side without
from Von Miller.
With Disley not in the game.
Yeah.
Why isn't he in the game? There was a timeout called. Like, there was plenty of time. It's not like he was exhausted.
Yeah.
If he's your best blocking tight end, and that's why you got him, why isn't he then in the game in that spot, first and goal from the 5?
Yep.
And why are you running little sweet?
Like, yeah, I would
run
say
a darn ball.
Yeah,
run up the
I would
middle
say
and let's go.
By and large, I liked a lot of what I saw, and I did see some differences. I saw him empowering Russell from the pocket. You know, and there's going to be some critical kind of minuses on Russell's grade sheet today. Yeah. A third down, early in the first half that I love how you stand there and there's pressure in your face. And guess what? You're going to get pressure in your face. But you got to make that little comeback throw to David Moore on the sidelines. On the third down, on the third to last drive of the game, there's a quick out. You got to throw it. It's right there. Like, this is a minus on your grade sheet. To Jerron Brown on the second to last drive. Bro, that's these plays were there to be made. Russell not trusting some of that inexperience outside, maybe even shortening the game more. Like, nope, if I'm blind to that, I'm not throwing a pick right there and ending this game. We'll keep playing here, and I'll get one more shot with a minute to go, which he got,
and then
fumbled the snap, unfortunately.
So weird. Yeah, so look, incomplete on shot. It's just his first game. I just kind of up and down and an interesting day in Denver. The Russell thing is so weird. I mean, if he had not done well in that drive, if they had gone 3 and out or 4 and out and lost the game because he just simply couldn't make a play, you kind of say, throw up your hands and say, well, he just didn't have it in the moment he really needed to. That's a failure. But it was so weird to see him fumble the snap like that. It was snatched.
Everything was snatched away.
It was so out of character, right? Yeah. Like, if he'd gotten sacked, you'd been like, you'd have something definitive. Russell, don't hold on to the ball so long in that spot. You can't take a sack.
And he owned it. He said half the sacks were on him yesterday post-game.
Right. But you can live with a bunch of those sacks. You couldn't have lived with one with a minute left and no timeouts.
Nope.
But it was just so weird to see the ball bounce off his hands like that on a snap. It's just not the way you expect that thing to go. So, all right, that's sort of the intricate details of it. But let's broaden it back out and go big picture. Encouraged or discouraged? And we can open the phone lines back up a little bit because I think there's some reasons for both yesterday. Did this confirm your worst fears, or were you able to recognize some of the positives that were taken out of a 3-point loss on the road? 206-421-3776. Grab some more of your thoughts. We'll try to give you our answers next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Confusing game in a lot of ways yesterday, Brock and Salk. An hour away from Pete Carroll joining us, and hopefully he can help us sort through some of what we got a chance to see in Denver. This hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. And the phone lines here are open, 206-421-3776. Brock, we went through some of the details, and I know often the devil is in the details, mm-hmm. but when you watch a football game, sometimes it's easier to get away from the details and being away from some of the specifics of everything you see from your own team. I thought Chris Sullivan on Twitter did a really good job with this, of just saying he's that 30-acre fortress. It was a bad game on the road that the team lost by 3 points with a comically bad call, a terrible missed field goal, and the first game in a new system for the whole offense with the best wide receiver out of the game. Is it the disaster that it seemed to be? And I know that it's easy to go to a dark place, especially on Twitter, immediately during and following a game. It's really easy to get to that dark place in a hurry. But I don't know that I saw this as sort of the overwhelmingly negative disaster that a lot of people did yesterday.
Disaster was the only game I've called on radio for the Seattle Seahawks.
Against the Rams?
That was a disaster. That's a colossal, uncompetitive disaster where you get railroaded out of your own building. Yesterday is exactly what we expected it to be, a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. Through all the other good and the bad and the ugly, if the Seahawks had been up 17, okay, that game was going to come back down, going to probably be tied, going to be a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. The Broncos, if they were up 17, they were going to play soft, and Russ's going to make some plays. It's going to get within a field goal or touchdown and be a one-possession. I mean, that was going to be a one-possession game in the fourth quarter.
But I think the reason a lot of people are feeling that way today is because of a few reasons. But number one, because the Broncos moved the ball so well. Because they had, 530 yards or so of offense yesterday, and three turnovers, three interceptions was really the difference in that. Yeah. And if you don't get those interceptions, that's not a one-score game in the fourth quarter. On the other hand, you did.
Yep.
You did get those interceptions. But the Broncos moved the ball fairly effortlessly in the game, and the Seahawks did not. And at the end of the day, you know, we can talk about it being a one-score game. I think a lot of the frustration comes from that. It kind of led me to a place of Earl Thomas, who comes up with a big pick and certainly looked like Earl Thomas out there. Does that make you want to trade him more or keep him?
I'll tell you what, Mrs. Thomas weighed in on Twitter last night. She wants the respect and wants to get paid, and so does Earl. Earl still, even after that game.
But if the Seahawks aren't going to pay him during the season,
right?
And you're looking at it saying, okay, if you thought that game was awful, you should want Earl traded and get as much as you can and try to rebuild. If you thought that the team was okay, then you
I saw your Twitter poll last night. Yeah. What was the result of that?
Most people wanted to keep Earl because he looked good. Because he's the shiny object in front of you. Oh, my God, he looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, but you can't trade him. He still looks good.
Yep.
Well, but maybe you can get even more for him because he looked good in that game.
Yeah, I think that's the problem right there. I don't know if you're going to, unless there's a massive injury to a team that's really in need. And if Earl keeps playing this way and keeps playing at a high level and keeps getting a few takeaways. And by the way, that was not that hard a play. I think Tedrick and certainly McDougal makes that pick. That was an awful throw by Case Keenum. I appreciated Schlaer saying, hey, put his foot in the ground, made an unbelievable play. Yes, he did. But most safeties make that. I mean, McDougal's picks, a couple of them, were even better than that play. So as far as what he had to judge in the ground, he had to cover. Yeah, he did.
206-421-3776. The question, overarching, Brock, more positive or more negative yesterday?
Oh, more positive. Yeah, more positive. Will Dissly was phenomenal. Michael Dixon was phenomenal. You played with tremendous effort and heart to overcome. You know, that's a game that you give up, as you said, 500 yards and you don't get conversions on third down that could have easily gotten away from you. It would have been a 2-3-4 score game, but it wasn't. And your guys are going to fight and claw. You're going to play everybody. It's all hands on deck. Now, it's positive only if you keep getting better from this point. If next week you're a repeat mistake offender, right, and you're kind of like Jake, you know, I think that was the term you used, and we continue to see mistakes and errors and blown coverages and guys running free, then it may darken this one a little bit. But for me, yeah, I think that falls a little more on the positive
end. Let me buzz through a couple of calls, see what you guys think. 206-421-3776. Jeff is in Spokane. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
I'll just start with what I'm encouraged by. I mean, the biggest thing for me was the contributions of the youth on the team. You know, I think obviously Disley really stepped up. I thought Trey Flowers did a pretty good job, gave up a lot of yards, but didn't make any glaring mistakes. What I'm discouraged by, obviously, defensive line play, depth, which I think we knew was going to be a pretty big issue coming into the season. And then that right tackle spot, I think, yeah, is going to be a problem all season long. One other point I'd like to make, Rashad Penny, it really baffles me. The whole game, it just to me appeared that he shies away from contact, and he does, you know, the one good run he had, he gave himself up and went to the ground. It just doesn't really fit with the identity of what Pete and John have always looked for in a runner, a violent guy and someone who loves that contact. And maybe that's the difference in, you know, the scheme and having Schottenheimer there and Mike Solari there. So, anyway, just my thoughts.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's some really good points there. I thought Rashad was heavy-legged and heavy-lunged. He looked like a guy that missed the preseason.
And was having to play his first game in altitude and heat.
Yes, and he just did not have the kind of burst and the kind of juice. Carson, on the other hand, looked like one hungry dude that just was continued to be so doggone explosive. And at any time, you're like, okay, he may house it, man. I mean, that hurdle move, I mean, stay on his feet. Yeah, most guys hurdle, right? Then they're out of control, don't have the body control, they tumble down. He, like, hurdled and just, yeah, kept going. Just no problem. Thanks. There's 20 yards.
He's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, he is.
Chris Carson back in as the single setback with a slot near side, and Carson gets it. And he jumps over a man at the 10, 15, 20, down the far sidelines and steps out of bounds.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say Rashad Penny doesn't like contact. He liked it for 3 years at San Diego State and shattered a lot of records. He was also a kickoff returner, and when you do that, you can't be scared. And he took many of those to the house.
He was underwhelming yesterday. I think that's fair. He also had a really nice play in the passing game, and it'll get overlooked because ultimately he needs to be a runner, not just a pass receiver. But I really like the play he made when Russell scrambled.
And
he adapted
alive.
To it.
Yeah.
He stayed alive. He made himself get open, and Russell hit him for about a 20-yard play that led to the touchdown to Brandon Marshall. Just play later. So 206-421-3776. Steve's in Newcastle. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hey guys, thanks for taking my call. You know, yesterday's game, I'm saying neutral, neither positive nor negative, but I kept reminding myself that some of our best seasons had some really rough starts, and also a Pete Carroll coach team, somebody new steps up, and I like the guys. A comment earlier with, you know, all the young people stepping up. Disley was amazing. I was never a big fan of Jimmy Graham, and I love to see that tight end play the way we played yesterday.
Yeah, Jimmy, two catches, 8 yards in Green Bay last night.
Big day. Big day for Jimmy in his debut. Jake's in Oregon. Good morning, Jake, on line three.
Good morning, guys. So, you know, in the NFL, there's really two kind of directions you can go to win. You can win old school, hard nose, X's and O's football. Or you can win with a leader that just has that kind of special X factor, right? Russell Wilson was never a combine leader. He was never a, I'm going to meet all the specs type of quarterback. I mean, so many people overlooked him. I mean, third round, come on. Bottom line is he's not rested on the same type of laurels that others have. He's rested on a special ingredient. And that special ingredient is what makes Russell Wilson so special. And you see it in different little areas in the NFL, but really, if you can't replicate that, if you can't do it over and over and over again, something's going on upstairs. Something's going on in the psyche. Something's going on up there. So I think we're seeing Russell Wilson 2.0, guys. I think when you rest on that kind of passion, that kind of zest, and Brock, you know what I'm talking about. You got in the NFL. It was
Jake,
big. It was huge.
Jake,
oh,
I got to cut you off. I don't think either of us have any idea.
I'm kind of following the energy. No, Jake, I love the energy. I love a lot of what you said, but
I don't get it.
Is this more negative, like Russell's luck's run out, or this is more Russell is going to carry these guys?
I think what's happening here, guys, is actually kind of right in the middle. See, because there's a very special ingredient that Russell knows how to define.
Okay.
Nobody else can define.
Okay.
All right.
I don't understand. All right.
Well, did you just cut him off, Kyle? I like it.
Kyle.
Aggressive move from Kyle.
Kyle.
Kyle, I didn't understand anything.
Jake, you call
saying.
Back from Oregon.
He says, this is 2.0.
I didn't get that at all.
Jake, you call back
Brock,
again.
You know what I'm talking about.
Kind of.
Did you?
I was kind of following it.
I didn't follow it.
I will
that.
Tell you, man, Russell's got some secret sauce. If that's what Jake's saying, like a confidence.
Is it?
Yes.
Is that what he was saying?
I think that's what
Nobody
he was saying.
Nobody has a clue what he was saying.
All right, can we just get Roger in Tacoma real quick, bring some sanity to this deal? Roger, what'd you think yesterday?
You know, like everyone else, you got mixed emotions about it, but let me tell you what I didn't like. Well, first of all, I called you about a week ago, told you that we needed to pick up about five players. Well, a couple of those players that we needed to pick up were experienced linebackers.
Yep, yep.
And we didn't do it. And so, I mean, the roster is very, very shallow. And some of the young players did pretty well. But I just disgusted with Sean. I don't know what Sean Harmon was even. I don't know. Did he have a game plan? Like he was pulling plays out of his rear end. I don't know what he was doing. You know, third and inches and you throw. And this is what we were trying to get back to old Seahawks football. And to do that, you have to pound the belly to weaken the beast. You got to run early in order for it to pay dividends in the second half. And it was Daryl Bevel all over again.
Roger, that play was so disappointing to me. I mean, it crushed my soul.
They lined up third and inches, and I thought for sure the same formation they had in the preseason, same formation that they ran. I was like, okay, good.
Right.
We can get third
and
inches.
I would have been fine with Russell Goose in the center and doing a little quarterback sneak
something.
Yeah,
so would I.
But I'm not going to start crushing the new offensive coordinator after 60 minutes. I can't do it. I agree with everything you said. I can't disagree with one thing out of Roger's mouth. But I need to see more than 60 minutes worth of play calling before I can start crushing Brian Schottenheimer, right?
Soft safety market. Soft safety market.
It's true. It's very, very soft. Uh-oh. All right, good news, bad news, no news, including something new. I tried for the very first time on Friday night, and then Pete Carroll at 9:30. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk.
Good news, bad news, no news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, it's our first Monday day after a Seahawks game of the season. That means Pete Carroll will join us coming up here in 45 minutes. I'm anxious to hear from him today. It's a different feel to this season, at least for me. Maybe it's the turn that the team is making. I'm not going to call it a full rebuild, but I'm watching them with a little bit different expectations. We'll talk more about that coming up at 9 o'clock. Before we do it, though, Brock, what's in the news?
And it is time to turn a little bit. We're turning.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Huskies are 1-1 on the season after a 42-point win over North Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, that is... that's 1-1's bad news. You should be 2-0 heading to Utah. Now, it is going to be in prime time Saturday night. I think it's been announced. If not, I'm going to break news here. But,
no, it is. Yeah, it's on ESPN.
Yes, and Greasy, the crew that did the first game, the Auburn game, is the same crew that's going to do the game in Salt Lake City and Rice-Eccles Stadium. That's going to be alive and electric. 1-1, good win over North Dakota. That was no news. You were going to win that game. How they played, pedestrian style offensively, not good enough. So ultimately, in the scheme of things, I'm going to say bad news.
Yeah, I will say no news in general. I mean, 1-1, you knew they were going to win this one. I'm glad that they're 1-1, Kyle, though, and not 2-0. Thank you. Thanks for the help on
nice
that.
Nice try, Mike.
Appreciate that. I will say, though, that it is not as bad news as you do, that they didn't play all that well in a win. I think that can be good for a team. If you go out there and play a team like North Dakota but don't dominate them, I think that leads to a lot of great coaching leading into what should be a really challenging game on the road at Utah. So I will say it's actually good news that it went the way it went.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Seattle Storm took a 2-0 series lead over the Washington Mystics in the WNBA Finals, now are one game away from bringing possibly their third title back to Seattle.
Well, as the biggest Storm fan in Seattle, I will tell you this is great news. No, seriously, I've become a fan. I went to the game on Friday night, first Storm game that I've been to. I went to the WNBA All-Star game last season because a friend of mine had tickets. But Matt Pittman, thank you to him for hooking us up with some seats. And we went on Friday night to go see game one. Brock, it was awesome. The caliber of basketball is amazing.
Yep.
And shame on me for not watching it more before now. They really were fun to watch. The people there are going off and there's an excitement level. But I will say this, and this is a general thought I have about basketball, NBA. Men's, women's, no matter what. Do we have to have non-stop noise? Fake noise. I don't mean cheering. Could we take a break? Like, could we just cut it back like 25% of the time?
It was too loud for my kids.
No, I'm not saying it was too loud. It was fine. I love the noise. But do we need to like pretend fake call for loud all the time? Do we need music while the game's being played? Like, I just don't think we need all of those things. The product on the court is good enough that you don't need to take away from it with non-stop nonstop noise.
Mike, you have to be plugged in this generation, okay? You can't unplug them. Are you
kidding
me?
But the thing is, the moment they stopped, they laid out one time late in the game, and the crowd responded by chanting, "It's all over." And it was genuine and normal and real, and you didn't need to be prompted. The fans get it. They know how to make noise on their own at the right times without having to be told to do so.
Well, overall, great news. They're now one win away from their third title. Gosh. That is pretty stinking awesome for Sue Bird as well. Just kind of, I think, reborn with Breanna Stewart, her, you know, the UConn, the bloodlines, and handing over to the league MVP, as this will be Breanna's franchise. Breanna for the next decade or so. That's all great news. Taking care of business now. Go get one in Washington or win the fifth game back here.
It really is cool, man. I mean, I honestly don't mean to make it sound negative. That's a problem I have with basketball in general. NBA basketball, doesn't matter. I think there's too much of that. But man, the quality of that game and just watching them, the way they move the ball,
the way they pass.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All of it.
Good news, bad news, no news.
After losing 2-3 to the Yankees over the weekend, ESPN gives the Mariners a 0.1% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, that's really bad news, man. Bad news. I was watching from afar. I was checking the score on Friday and on Saturday and yesterday as well, flipping a little bit between the games and just keeping an eye on him. And good for you, Eddie Diaz. Continue your march. I think you're going to end up the second-best closer in the history of this game. You continue to do it yesterday with just a one-run margin in ways that no one in this game has ever done it. That really now is the story, unfortunately, over the last 20 or so games. It will be about Eddie Diaz and not a playoff chase.
I'm thinking about keeping the Mariners' name out of my mouth entirely until they're eliminated. I don't think it's healthy for me to talk about them until it's officially over.
Mike,
keep the Mariners out of your mouth.
On the day that mathematically eliminated, Kyle, I'm not sure I should say anything about them until then.
Mike, keep the Mariners' name out your mouth.
I
might have to. Is that to say that
Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
Mike can put the Mariners' name back in his mouth?
I might have to.
Maybe?
I might have to hold off for a little bit here. I have nothing else
good
to
news,
say.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Are you just quitting?
Yeah, I'm quitting on talking about them until they're mathematically eliminated.
Okay.
I don't have anything to say.
Are you quitting on the segment because they made fun of you putting your name back in your
mouth? No.
Okay,
no.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I might.
WSU defense allowed 109 total yards to San Jose State, the fewest yards they've allowed since 1994.
Tracy Clays can coach, man. That may have been the best hire that Mike Leach has made at Wazoo, period. End of story. Alex Grinch was awesome. He was a young guy on the up and up. But Tracy Clays, his coach defense, has always had less than many of the teams he's played against, has done more with less. Really good news as they set some of those school records.
Agreed. Anytime you can beat San Jose State, that's a win you
can
take.
Oh, you just shut him out, man. You take Sparty down.
Hey, did you guys see the golf? Can we get a little golf scoreboard update here? Daytime golf?
I thought we were soft. I thought we were too satisfied with the first half.
That's true.
I thought we had a great first half on offense, which I think is good.
Yeah.
I thought that... but we need a complete game.
Right.
No doubt about it.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it. A little golf update if you're following the BMW Championship.
Who's not?
Three-way tie for the lead right
What?
Now. 18 under. Billy Horschel, Keegan Bradley, Justin Rose.
Keegan.
All tied at 18 under. Webb Simpson, Xander Schauffele, 17 under. And Tiger and Rory are two back at 16.
Wow.
Under.
Yeah. Okay, Tiger.
So there you go. That's what you're looking at today with some iffy course conditions over the weekend.
Like, does Tiger have enough game left and holes left to compete?
Tiger
or is he done?
Is through 12.
Oh.
The leaders are through 9 and 10.
Okay.
So a bunch of people had to
watch. Okay.
But it would take something pretty impressive for Tiger to actually win this. In any event, that's where you're at. Let's see. Pete Carroll's going to join us in about a half hour. Interesting game to talk about. We got some big picture, some small picture, and everything in between next on Brock and Salk.